Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Good Nights Sleep Project podcast. If you have a sleep problem, insomnia, waking up multiple times at night, snoring, and having to sleep in the other room, sleep apnea, waking up foggy, tired, exhausted, restless leg syndrome, neck, shoulder, back pain, and more, then this podcast may provide answers for these problems. Although it's not medical advice, it's a summary of my learnings on having sleep problems for 20 plus years and my discussions with hundreds of sleep practitioners, apnea specialists, snoring specialists, narcolepsy specialists, and more. I hope that if you do have a sleep problem and that's what's caused you to listen to this podcast, that you'll find the beginnings of an answer or perhaps the whole answer by listening. Tune in, but I want you to know again that this is not medical advice, this is not tax advice, this is not financial advice, this is not psychological advice. It's purely information. What you do with it is up to you and your responsibility. But again, our goal here at the Good Night Sleep Project is to at least give you the help you need to have a great night's sleep, 7 nights a week, if possible, every night of your life.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Janet Bennett. She's the founder of a system called I Just Want to Sleep. The website is ijustwanttosleep.com, and it appears to be a system that helps people sleep better by reducing snoring and giving them a whole host of other benefits. So, Janet, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how did you figure out a way to help people with their sleep? What was, you know, usually it probably means that you've had sleep issues or you've been around someone who's had. Like, what's your background here?
Okay. Well, I'm a speech pathologist. I have been in the business for more than 40 years. And I have specialized in the treatment of tongue thrust for the past 25 years. And no, I don't have sleep problems, but I didn't know anything about sleep problems, actually. But about 15 years ago, I was treating a 14-year-old football player for tongue thrust. Now, that's when you swallow and your tongue pushes the back of your teeth and maybe you end up with buck teeth. Or maybe you swallow with your tongue coming out between your teeth and you have an open bite. So there's several different things that can happen if you're not swallowing correctly. But anyway, so I was seeing him for that. And he was going to be coming for 7 lessons. And he was with me on his 3rd lesson. And his mother came into the room and she said, "Janet, what are you doing to Adam?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, he has always been the loudest snorer in the world. The windows and the doors just rattle. And now he's not making a sound." And I looked at Adam and I said, "Tell me more," because I knew nothing about snoring. "Tell me more." And he said, "Well, it's true. I can concentrate better in school. I'm making better grades. And this is what really got me," he said, "and I run faster." So that totally got my attention. I ran home, didn't even have a computer in my office at the time. And I just knew when I got on the internet that I was going to find that people had their snoring treated with tongue exercises. Okay. I had no idea. But that's not what I found. What I found was that they are lopping off their uvula, or they're pulling their jaw forward, or they're using a CPAP machine, or expensive appliances, you know. And the more I read, the more I realized none of them were really working. So I got excited. I've been passionate ever since that day. And it's the way to go, because it's a harmless way to fix your snoring, to stop it. And it's just been a very blessed road to travel so far. So does that answer that question?
Yeah, well, for people that don't know, why does the tongue contribute to snoring or sleep apnea or other sleep problems?
I'm sorry, what? Say that again.
Well, I said for people that may not know, why does a weak tongue contribute to sleep apnea or snoring or other sleeping problems?
Well, okay. So what really happens is we talk about the snoring because it's something we can hear and we can identify. Okay. But actually what this comes down to is mouth breathing. And when you breathe through your mouth and, you know, you're sleeping, your mouth's open, you're going to make some noises as the wind goes back and forth. So that's the snoring part. But the thing is, my tongue exercises, whenever they're done correctly, the exercises train your tongue to live up on the roof of your mouth. And when you have your tongue up on the roof of your mouth, you cannot breathe through your mouth. Try it. Put your tongue up there. You can't breathe through your mouth. You're forced to breathe through your nose. And so these really are the major things that need to be fixed to stop snoring and to have a better, healthier life, because it forces you to nasal breathe. When we breathe through our mouth, we get cold, dirty air into our body. And when we breathe through our nose, of course, the air is clean because of the hairs in our nose, and it's warmed. And the biggest part about this is when we breathe through our nose, there's this gas that we create through sinuses, parasinuses, and our nasal area, and it's called nitric oxide. It's not nitrous oxide, it's nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is what helps regulate circulation and oxygenation and all of that stuff. I'm not a doctor, but it's what our body needs every night to get rejuvenated and ready for the next day, okay? And so if you aren't breathing through your nose, your body is not making nitric oxide. So half the world breathes through their mouth, okay?
Yeah.
And people don't realize that they what's happening. They don't know about nitric oxide. They don't know about these other things, but the tongue exercises come into play because you want to train the tongue to live up on the top instead of on the bottom.
So throughout the day, ideally people's tongues should be, you know, sitting on the top of their mouth, on the top of their hard palate.
Right. It should be up on the palate, tongue tip behind the teeth, tongue as flat as, you know, touching as much of the upper palate as possible without being uncomfortable, just like sandwiched in between, you know, the up and top and bottom. That's where it should be. Okay. And when a person swallows, their tongue tip should be right behind their teeth, and they swallow by kicking off from their palate and not from their teeth.
So, all right. So what happens to people? Do their tongues get weaker? I mean, from eating and talking, that doesn't exercise your tongue enough?
Well, no, apparently it doesn't. And the thing is, people who have picture an open mouth. A person can breathe through their mouth, but it's not hanging wide open and the tongue isn't always hanging out, okay? But the tongue is allowed, when it's on the bottom, it's allowed to get real fat and happy and lazy. And whenever, it's not made to live up on the roof of the mouth. Just the act of putting your tongue up on the roof of the mouth and making sure it stays up there all day. I mean, you're doing it subconsciously because we're in the habit of it, but just doing that keeps your tongue toned and stronger than the tongue that just gets to lay down all day. And so when it comes time to change that, that position of the tongue, you need to do some exercises to get it toned and stronger. And the other big thing that we find is that a majority of the people have a tongue that is way too wide for their mouth. And so my program makes the tongue skinnier.
Okay. Why would their tongue, is it their palate is too small, their mouth is too small, or is it their tongue is too wide for some reason?
Well, normally it's going to be that the tongue is too wide. The upper palate is skinnier than the bottom. Okay. And so that's why one big reason that we have to make the tongue skinnier, because we want the tongue to live up on the top and we want it to be comfortable, so it'll become a habit. However, you can see people with a tongue that's way wide and they have like scalloped edges, just little indentations all around, which means their tongue's running into their teeth inside. Or they might have these big fissures in their tongue, you know, where you can tell it's the skin's lapping over because it's just too wide and it's tight whenever it goes in their mouth. And so I have this special process of making the tongue skinnier. And I know people are always wondering, well, how do you make the tongue skinnier? there is a surgical procedure, and it's where they literally shave off the sides of your tongue to make it skinnier. That's one procedure. And then there's another surgical procedure where they just kind of cut the tip part in half, cut out a wedge, and then close it up so you've got a skinnier tongue. So the great thing is I have a way of doing that so that there's no blood or anything like that. I have a La Naturelle way to do that. And every bit of this program is natural. It's harmless. And the goals here, again, the goals are just to breathe through your nose instead of your mouth. Keep your tongue up on the roof of your mouth instead of on the bottom. And it should stop you from snoring. And whenever I first met this football player I was telling you about and went home and found out that nobody knew about tongue exercises for snoring, I decided that I just wanted to produce some kind of program right then. Okay, that's the way I am. And so I decided that I wanted to work with a lot of people at first to make sure, because, you know, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I had missed something. And he was just one guy. So I set out to find a lot of people, and I found 86 people all over the United States who wanted to be my, quote, guinea pigs. And I wanted to use them to help me word the perfect program, because I started thinking, wait a minute, everybody, a large percentage of the population needs to know about these tongue exercises, but I'm only one person, and I felt a need to save the world, you know, but I couldn't do that. So I quickly thought, I don't want to train the trainer. That does not interest me, and I can't do it by myself. So I immediately decided I needed to produce a treatment program that the person who's not educated about any of this stuff or are educated about it, that they could do it by themselves. They could actually look at pictures or look at videos and read about the exercises and know exactly how to do them. And I figured if they had step-by-step instructions on everything, they should be able to do it without me. So that's what I set out to do. And these 86 people, it took me 6 or 7 months to treat all of these people. And it was when we didn't have Skype back then. So anyway, every morning, the first once a week, I would send them a new lesson. And that evening, I would talk to them on the phone, and I'd make sure they understood how, you know, how I worded it. And if they didn't, they would help me reword it. It just made me feel better, you know, knowing that 86 people I'd gotten their opinion on how to word things, and they understood it. So after all was said and done, wait, before I say that. Okay, so I didn't know anything about snoring, but since I had started looking on the internet now, I started seeing some other health issues that seemed to be related maybe to mouth breathing or whatever. I was still at the learning stage, okay? I didn't know myself. So I just saw all these different health issues like dry mouth, restless leg syndrome, high blood pressure, insomnia, heartburn, waking with sweating, all kinds of things like that. And right. So I had this checklist where the people, before they started my program, I got a baseline on what issues they had. And then I did the same thing after they did my program so I could compare if anything else changed. Okay. I had no idea that anything else would change. I was not anticipating anything else. So after treating all these people, 94% stopped snoring.
Sheesh, that's amazing.
It was
how
amazing.
Long is the how long is the program, and how much time did they spend every day in
Okay, that's great. That's a great question. It's 7 weeks long, and each week I would teach them new exercises. And the exercises, each exercise by itself wouldn't take, well, it'd be 5 minutes or less, okay? Not very long at all, but they had to promise me that they would do them twice a day. So, 10 minutes or less every day. And I would always joke with them, tell them, now, if you screw up and do it a little longer, it won't hurt. Because none of these will harm you. It will just make you better faster. And so I found when all was said and done, these other health issues, we saw great results with them. But I learned very quickly as people started reprimanding me that I couldn't say that my program helped heartburn or helped any of those other things until I had done it with a double-blind study and had it published in a journal. Okay, so this is just what I was told, and so I had to omit any medical words that I used. But the thing is that these people just reported this to me. Now, I was just the messenger. And this is not something that I'm saying the I Just Want to Sleep program did. It's just things that the people experienced after my program. And
customers said. Right.
And I'm going to share a few of them, if that's okay.
You know what? You know what I say? If everything needed to be a double-blind study, then no one should eat food or drink water because it hasn't been tested that food is good for you. So no one should eat any food because there's been no studies on it. Yeah.
Good point. Well, the other thing is that we're kind of thinking about over here is it really ethical if I were to meet some people who have sleep apnea or snoring, maybe they do have sleep apnea or not. I can't say that my program helps that either, but can I ask them to sit over here in a blind study and be the control group and for a couple of months maybe? And you know, their heart is at risk and those kinds of things. So anyway, that is interesting to note. But okay, just very quickly here. Heartburn went away 82%. Restless leg syndrome, and I know the books say it's a neurological problem. 92% of the people say it went away. ADD, 60%. Of course, you see, they're breathing through their nose. They're getting clean air and filtered air and nitric oxide. And so everything's oxygenated. And, you know, their bodies are totally different. Of course, you don't wake up with a dry mouth when you breathe through your nose. You don't wake up with that headache when you breathe through your nose. 88% stop grinding their teeth. And I had an orthodontist from Connecticut called me early on and said, Janet, I want to tell you why your program works. And I said, okay, tell me. I'm wondering myself. And he said, well, when you put your tongue up on the spot, on the roof of your mouth, he said, it aligns your cranial bones. And so if you think about it, people who grind their teeth, they grind because they aren't lined up correctly. They're trying to find that place. And sure enough, the people that I treat, that's one of the first things that stops because they're getting lined up. And, you know, a lot of the martial arts things, I don't know much about them, but I do know that a lot of them require their students to keep their tongue up on the roof of their mouth while they're working, practicing.
Right.
So it was interesting, all these different symptoms that they responded to. There were two symptoms. Now I had like probably, I don't know, 15, but two of those had to do with sleep apnea. And one of them was wake up with the sensation of choking. And the other one was chokes, gasps, or holds breath while sleeping. Okay, those are two sleep apnea symptoms. Well, those are the only two that went away 100% of the time.
That's great. So why do you think that from what I read and talked to people about, you know, apnea is caused in story two by the tongue, you know, falling back into the throat and obscuring the throat so the person can't breathe. But what's your understanding of why the tongue exercises work? Is it just because you're strengthening the tongue so that it doesn't fall back into the throat?
Well, that's a huge part of it, yes. And that's a great question. Okay, so you lay down, you're tired, your tongue's tired, you go to sleep and all the muscles relax. Your tongue's made up of many muscles and they all get relaxed. And if your tongue is not used to living up on the roof of your mouth, then where is it? It's hanging around on the bottom. And as your head goes back on the pillow, your tongue starts to fall backwards some. And, you know, during the night it just gets lazier and lazier and may start creeping down to block your airway a little bit, maybe partially to begin with. And then as it goes down, it gets stuck in your airway. And that's when your air is cut off. And that's when that symptom of choking and gasping, you know, because that part of your brain that tells you to wake up works. And so before I finish answering that, I have an aside. I was introduced to a researcher at the University of Arizona, Dr. Ralph Fregosti, and he specializes in research of the tongue. And so he and I have been working together for years now. And he explained to me why what I've done with the tongue here, and that is the tongue has a natural characteristic, a natural suctioning characteristic. And so when that tongue is traveling backwards and going down your airway and getting stuck, what it's done is it has suctioned itself. And that's why it's so hard to for that tongue to be released without you waking up and making that happen. Okay. So he pointed out that in my program, what I have done is I'm using that suctioning characteristic, but I'm using it for good. And so we're directing the tongue up to the roof of the mouth so that it can literally suction itself and stay up there while you're sleeping.
Oh, okay. So the program is about 7 weeks, and you encourage people to do it twice a day for what, like 5 minutes each time, or how long is it?
Well, each exercise has a different instruction. So it might teach you an exercise put your tongue up on the roof of your mouth and then just open and close your lower jaw and keep your tongue up there, suctioned up there while you're opening and closing your lower jaw. And you might do that until you've done it like 50 times. Okay, so that's not timed, but it's, you know, it doesn't take that long to do it. There's an exercise where you, when I was growing up, it was a scolding sound. You put your tongue tip on the spot and it's like suctioning in, and it's a, like that. And you do that for, you know, maybe 15 seconds. So they're all different. Okay. But none of them go too long. What I wanted to tell you about, the lessons. One of the big things, most important part of this program is how I make the tongue skinnier. And there's a way, if certain muscles are stimulated in your tongue in a certain way, then it can actually change the way the tongue is the size of the tongue. And and so I had been playing with ways to make that happen for a while, and I couldn't find a utensil, if you will, that would allow me to make contact with the tongue and do what I thought needed to be done to make it skinnier, knowing, you know, what muscles are working and all that good stuff. So I invented my own utensil, and I have a patent on it. And it's called the tongue stick because I couldn't think of a better name. Yeah, it's called the tongue stick. And it is used to stroke certain areas of your tongue. And while you're doing that, you also are simultaneously performing an isometric exercise. So one of those movements tones your tongue. You know, you can see a tongue, you stick it out and it's all fat and flabby, you know, but then you see another one that's toned. It's actually got a few little waves in it, maybe a lower area down the middle of the tongue. Anyway, so that's the tone, and the isometric exercise that we do strengthens the tongue. So this is a real important part of this program. I have before and after pictures of people's tongues.
Really?
Yeah, super wide.
What do you notice? Skinnier. So, much skinnier does it get? How much skinnier does the tongue get?
Well, let's see. Let's picture this. You open your mouth and you stick your tongue out, so it's just relaxed and it's coming down maybe halfway to your chin. And if you look in the mirror, the sides of your tongue are probably as wide as your mouth is. Okay, it's filling up that whole mouth area horizontally. Can you picture that?
Yeah.
Okay, so after you make your tongue skinnier, you can actually put your mouth in the same position, but your tongue is not even meeting the sides of your mouth. There's actually a little room on either side, so that whenever you put your tongue inside, and quite often those scallops, those little indentations will disappear. And people will say, well, I'm not biting my tongue anymore. Lots of different things happen. Yeah. So
you should tell people your tongue thinner is made of tungsten, but it's not. I'm just kidding. It'd be funny.
Well, I had a female one time take my tongue stick and rub it down the side of her body. Oh well. Okay.
Really? Oh, China. Oh, that's funny.
Okay. All right. So
that's cool.
That didn't work though. So, and my test is FDA approved, and yeah. So it's important. Very important.
What is the indication that the FDA cleared it for? To make your tongue less wide?
What was the FDA for?
Yeah, you said the FDA approved it. What did they specifically approve the tongue stick for?
No, it is FDA approved. What it's made out of is okay to put in your mouth.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a functionality. I gotcha. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Huh.
Yeah, I didn't want anybody saying, "Oh, what's this going to do my mouth?" Yeah.
What do you do for people that have stuffed up nose and they can't breathe through their nose even if they want to?
I'm so glad you said that. Well, there are some people who will not benefit from my program, and that's the huge group there, the ones that can't breathe through their nose. Now, a lot of us have seasonal allergies, and that's okay. But some people are congested all of the time or three quarters of the time, and that's not okay. I mean, they can't breathe through their mouth when they sleep or they will die. So if I have someone come to me and they really want to do my program, the first thing they have to do is get their nose clear. You know, go to the otolaryngologist or, you know, do whatever they need to do. Get the deviated septum fixed, you know, whatever the problem is, do their best, because nothing's going to improve until that does, because they'll continue to mouth breathe all their life.
Well, what if you do the tongue? Have you had anyone that chronically stuffy nose, but they did the tongue exercises anyway?
Yes.
Did they experience anything happening to them?
Not very much. Yes.
So you've had people that have tried it regardless?
Well, okay, I've had one person, because normally I don't accept them, okay? Now, the people that have bought my book online, I say, let them know before they order it that if their nose is not clear, then they will not benefit from this program. But if they go ahead and buy it, that's their choice, okay?
Right.
But at one point, Ralph Fregosi, the researcher, and I, we've been trying for years to get grants through National Institute of Health, and we've never been able to get those grants. And the reason I'm saying this is, first of all, the people who looked at the grants, the reviewers, just didn't understand this. This was just too easy, too good to be true, and you know, it couldn't work.
It's not surgery, so they don't like it. Yeah.
That's right. And I wonder about politics and that too. But anyway, so at one point I decided I just really wanted to treat somebody. I wanted them to do research. I wanted them to have that overnight sleep study before they did my program, and then have it again after my program. That's all the research that needed. Okay. I mean, that tells you all. And so I found four adults, and they were willing to have the sleep study before and after. And one of these adults, and this is where I'm going with the nasal congestion, one of these adults had nasal congestion most of the time, but she still wanted to be one of my participants. And I allowed her to, because I felt great. I don't think she's going to get better, but this will help assure me that I'm on the right track with my thinking.
Right.
You know, so I just want to share very quickly. I can't share this anywhere else right now, but so I had this one man who stopped breathing 46 times an hour. And after sleep apnea. That's severe sleep apnea. And after seven lessons of my program, he stopped breathing 11 times an hour.
Oh, wow. That's dramatic.
Now he still has sleep apnea. Okay. But
right,
it was only
right.
7 weeks post. And I think that's something real important to look at too. You know, they talk about, and it's true, all the heart problems that people can have as a result of sleep apnea. Well, what if we could provide them with a treatment like this that worked very quickly? You know,
I bet this would do?
What?
Since part of the problem of, you know, sleep apnea, again, is the choking, and the CPAP or the oral appliance needs to either advance the tongue, or the CPAP needs to blow with a certain pressure. I bet you that by you doing, you know, someone doing your exercises, that they would require a lower pressure on their CPAP, which would make it more tolerable, because the tongue is less yes. likely to fall back into the throat. So even right. if it doesn't cure apnea, it still will help people with CPAP compliance. It'll help people, again, reduce the effects mm-hmm. of apnea and all that. So it's got a lot of
you're absolutely right.
positive things mm-hmm. to it, you know?
Yes, yes, you're right. Because I know when I started this so long ago, I found that 4% of the people who had a CPAP machine, only 4% used it. That's horrible. I'm not sure that the percentage is a whole lot more today, but it's because they just couldn't get used to that mask and they wouldn't go back to have that the air pressure regulated either. So know, it was faulted on both sides. But the two, if I may finish about these people, the two other people who did the overnight studies. One stopped breathing 17 times an hour at the beginning, and at the end, it went down to 3, which is considered no sleep apnea. Below 5 is no sleep apnea. Okay.
Right. Right.
And another one of them, she only stopped breathing 6 times an hour, but that's considered sleep apnea, and it went down to 1. And then the one with the stuffy nose, she only stopped breathing 6.8 times per hour. I say only 6.8 times per hour. Now, her after her study after the treatment, it was 6 as opposed to 6.8. So there's just a hair difference, okay? She still, you know, that was my example. But I found something very interesting working with someone who stopped snoring, who stopped breathing 46 times versus 6 times. They all had the same kinds of symptoms. The severity of the symptoms seemed to be the same. I mean, Johnny was just as tired as Mary, but they had a huge difference, you know, in the number of times they stopped breathing. So I thought that was just very interesting.
I'm just theorizing here, but over time, the person that stopped breathing, you know, 6 times an hour versus 46 times an hour, I would think the 46 one would experience all kinds of terrible medical problems. You know, it may take a few years, but I would think they would have far more problems than the other person. Yeah, quicker.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely.
When do you want to take this program? I mean, it seems like, I guess you don't have enough data, at least for the stuffy nose people. But I just wonder, it would be really cool if it did improve the stuffy nose people somehow. I'm not sure, you know, but I don't know if it's an interesting area.
Okay, I'll tell you when it could. And okay, so the stuffiness that I'm going to be talking about is not an allergic reaction. It's not a medical problem, okay? Some people have only breathed out of their mouth for their entire life. And so if they were to close their lips and try to breathe through their nose, it would be stuffed up. And most of them would panic because there was no air, and they would quickly open their lips, and they would not want to try that again. I've worked with people like that, and I knew, of course, now I knew before I worked with them that there was no physical problem. It was just a psychological thing, a habit, okay? They were habitual mouth breathers. And so what you have to do is you have to close your lips, and you have to make yourself keep your lips closed for 5 seconds. And that might be all you can handle. And then later on, go up to 10 seconds. It can take quite a while. It can take a few weeks to get it so that you're comfortable breathing through your nose. So that's a time when it could be fixed, you know. The other big thing, I can't believe I'm saying all this, but asthma, you know, asthma acts up in cold conditions, right? And I've worked with people who have asthma, and, you know, I'm saying when you breathe through your mouth, you're getting cold air in. Well, when they learn how to breathe through their nose, the air that they're taking in is no longer cold. And so what do you think happens with their asthma?
Oh, it goes away.
Well, it improves.
It improves.
It improves. It improves.
This is fantastic, you know. This is really great that people are experiencing all these positive effects. You know?
Oh, yes. I just stay so excited about it. And I actually have discovered something myself in the last week or two that I'd like to share, if I may. It sure. is, because we were talking about the future of the industry, you know, what do we see happening right. with this? And I ran across this this research article online. It was done by a Dr. Rick Wasing with the Netherlands Institute of Neuroscience. Netherlands Institute of Neuroscience, and they were looking at the link between sleep and mental disorders, and it caught my eye because of what we're, you know, all these mass shootings that we're going. I think it's at the forefront of everyone's mind, you know, people with mental disorders, and you know, maybe we need to really focus and be alert and try to help them. Okay, and so the article is fantastic. I'm just going to give you a conclusion here. So what happens is you get, let's say you get traumatized by something, and we've got these two things, excuse my medical terminology here, two things in our brain called amygdala and these amygdala, and these amygdala areas, they get activated when you are traumatized and or, you know, stimulated in a certain way. So they get activated, those areas do. And those are areas that will help control emotions and that kind of stuff. Okay, so, that, and they're supposed to do that. But then there's a time when the trauma is supposed to subside. You know, you calm down. And these amygdala are supposed to be able to shut down, rest, and reset, and, you know, get ready for the next thing that happens in your life. Well, it turns out that they can only, these areas can only calm down and reset if they get REM, if a person is able to get REM sleep. Mm. So if a person is not able to get REM sleep, that means that this trauma is still active and the next day something else happens. And instead of replacing the former one, it's just building onto it. Okay. Right. And so that's what this is all about. And so it was saying, like, for most people who suffer from PTSD, depression, anxiety, bad sleep is part of their illness. And mm-hmm. and so far, everyone has tried to improve sleep by trying to improve the anxiety or the depression. But that has right. been very difficult to do. And so this article was all about, what if we try to help the person learn how to sleep? Will that help get rid of the anxiety and depression, which I got very excited about? Helping people sleep is much easier than solving their mental problem, you see, and if helping right. sleep, of course, you know. So it's a promising yeah. way of improving illnesses that have stumped us for years, but I don't know how much hope is there for people to really believe that. But anyway, it's worth a shot at.
Well, that's great. I had a yeah. quick question. You said you have a lot of before and after tongue pictures. What do the mm-hmm. tongues look like before and after? You know, let's say they didn't do any tongue thinning, but they just did the program. Like, what did you notice about people's tongues? How do they look different after, you know, working out at the gym for 7 weeks?
Well, like I was saying before, when they stick their tongue out, it's not as wide. And see, that's right. our goal. And so it looks different because it's not as wide, and it hopefully doesn't have all those different crevices in it. You know, some tongues have a lot of crevices in it, and yeah. because it's too wide, and it fits better up on the roof of their mouth so that tongue can get suctioned up there at nighttime.
Is there anything else interesting you noticed about the tongues? Did they, I don't know, anything else that jumps out at you, or you thought that was strange, but interesting?
I don't know. I think I've kind of covered all I know about that. Just everybody's okay. tongue is different, but
yeah.
And so, you know, here's the deal. I work with people all the time in my office. But if a person's out there and they want to try this on their own, they just go to the website, ijustwantosleep.com, and whenever you get this program, you can have access to it immediately. And it's kind of like a book. You open it up and you see a table of contents. and you'll see lesson one and then exercise one, two, three. And you can click on whichever exercise you want. But I mean, hopefully you do lesson one first, you know, and you can go there and you'll see the words describing it, and you'll see a video showing you how to do that exercise. So it really did turn out the way I wanted it to. And I also, one more thing about children. The next, after I treated those 86 people, I decided to treat all children, and 100% of the children stopped snoring. And it was marvelous. It was marvelous. One little girl said, "I know I'm not snoring anymore." And I said, "Well, how do you know that?" She said, "Because my cat's sleeping with me again." So things like that, you know, this program, it's so easy to measure your success because of things like that happening. One woman said, "My rooster doesn't wake me up anymore." Something, you know, just different ways that people have of measuring their success. It's really fun to watch all that happen. I had one teenager who his sheets would get real messy. Now, your sheets get real messy because probably your legs are acting up, jumping around. And so as the program progresses, this guy said that his sheets were way over in the corner across from the bed. And each week those sheets got closer and closer and closer, meaning he wasn't they weren't being kicked off as strongly as they used to until they ended up staying on the bed. I mean, you know, things like that. It just shows you. I never really had to ask people if they were doing their exercises. I could tell because of the things that were happening. Yeah. Oh, but on the website, you can see 50 different comments by adults on the I Just Want to Sleep book. It gives you ideas of the kinds of things that they experienced while doing the program. And I also wrote an I Just Want to Sleep for Kids book. And you'll see that online also. And I've got some children's testimonials that embedded in the children's book. It's the same exercises, but there's a really lovely colored story for the parents to cover or read to their kids. And it explains to them what they're getting ready to do and why they're going to do it. It's really good. It helps them understand and appreciate doing it. So.
That's great.
So that's all I know right now.
Well, very good. What's the best way for folks? I guess, you know, go to the website, ijustwantosleep.com. There they can pick up the program. They can do maybe sessions with you over Skype or something if they want. They want to just be intense.
We can do that if you like. There's no problem with that. And also, they'll have access to my cell number. That's how serious I am. Okay? So people call me, ask me questions. If you get stuck on an exercise, I hope I can get you out of that. Okay.
That's great. Well,
thank you.
Thanks for all the work you do. And I'm glad you came on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Good Night's Sleep Project podcast. If you have a sleep problem, insomnia, waking up multiple times at night, snoring, having to sleep in the other room, sleep apnea, waking up foggy, tired, exhausted, restless leg syndrome, neck, shoulder, back pain, and more, then this podcast may provide answers for these problems. Although it's not medical advice, it's a summary of my learnings on having sleep problems for 20 plus years and my discussions with hundreds of sleep practitioners, apnea specialists, snoring specialists, narcolepsy specialists, and more. I hope that if you do have a sleep problem and that's what's caused you to listen to this podcast, that you'll find the beginnings of an answer, or perhaps the whole answer, by listening. Tune in, but I want you to know again that this is not medical advice, this is not tax advice, this is not financial advice, this is not psychological advice. It's purely information. What you do with it is up to you and your responsibility. But again, our goal here at the Good Night's Sleep Project is to at least give you the help you need to have a great night's sleep, 7 nights a week, if possible, every night of your life.